Hey, what's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Top Flight Pod. You know what it is? You know what we're here to do? Back on screen today, beautiful Austin, Texas. I'm with my G, football critic. Put some respect on his name, mate. He's the only person that can put a smile, a genuine smile, on Emiliano Rigoni's face. But football critic, welcome to the pod, brother. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good, H. You know, I'm happy that trip to Houston turned out to be better than expected, you know. For me, for Emmy, for anyone, it was a great game, and I'm just happy to be back here talking to you about it.
Yeah, dude, and you know what? Before we get into the episode, let's just real quick, let's recap our little trip to Houston, because it was interesting, bro. B had the duty of driving. He was the one that was in charge of the ship. He was in charge of getting us over there. And you and I, we were kind of just chilling in the back, but we weren't really that chill because the weather was bad, man. I mean, there was some parts where B said, yo, I can't even see the lines on the road. That's how thick the rain was that was coming down. And while we were in Houston, it did chill out. It did come down a little bit. But our friends in Austin were saying that, hey, the weather caught up to us here and it was bad in Austin while we were over there. But other than that, Bucky's was cool, mate. Of course, we had to stop there, get a little bit of a brisket sandwich, got a drink and some other candies for the way, right? Some chips and whatnot. Houston was nice, though. You know, the weather was cool once we got there. And I think the way that we got to the stadium, we got to see some cool murals and stuff like that. That's what I noticed. And, you know, that part of the city is kind of cool. It's vibrant. There's a bunch of art around there. And like you said, the trip was good to me, I guess you could say. And it was also cool to catch up with guys like OSG. You know, they do their coverage with Noodle Time. He said that he saw you. He gave you some tips or whatnot. But for me, I give the trip, mate, I'll give it a 9 out of 10 because we also got the win. So what was your thoughts?
No, I agree. I mean, definitely. It is my first away trip for Austin FC, right, since I came back to the States. Definitely, the rain was a little bit of a letdown because, I mean, it was impressive, a little bit scary to drive through all of that rain. But then getting to Houston, to Shell Energy Stadium, yeah, you know, we always joke around about that stadium being kind of empty and whatnot. But I actually like the atmosphere, you know, like the Houston fans with all of their jerseys. I kind of did feel like in enemy territory, you know. But what I liked it was that I saw a lot of scattered Austin FC jerseys, not belonging to the rival section, right? Like the little spot where mm-hmm. Los Verdes were. No, just random where the jerseys all around the stadium, meaning that, you know, there's Austinites in Houston and they're gonna go to support that team. So I enjoyed it.
Oh, mate, you know what? Vice versa, I would say also that there's Dynamo fans in Austin. 100%, you know, because Dynamo has that history in Texas. They won a championship way back when, but it wasn't their team. They were a San Jose transplant team, but that's a whole other story. We're not going to get into that. But yeah, it was awesome. And also shout out to Houston, the communications team out there. They treated us absolutely fantastic. Football critic, you know, they let us cook, in other words. I mean, they really let us cook out there. We got to speak to a lot of players, where we got a segment dedicated to that later on in the pod, so make sure to stay tuned and we'll get right into that, brother. But Alex, football critic, let's get into the episode, mate. Now, Austin FC did damn near the impossible last night as they defeated a semi-informed team away from home. Yes, in their house, not at Q2, and with shots on target, believe it or not. Now, Josh Wolf and his men, they claimed all 3 points after Emiliano Rigoni and CJ Fodry came off the bench to win it late. All it took was a hefty performance by the defenders from the defense. And of course, like always, big saves from Mr. Brad Stuver, a slight flick from CJ, a little bit of a header, and a cool finish by Rigoni. It was what Austin FC needed to get the 3 points away from home, mate. Now, it was interesting stats. Houston maybe was favored, but overall, give me your thoughts on last night's match, Alex.
Overall, it was a good match by Austin. I mean, you know, I said in the pre-game video that I didn't expect Austin to play that well because of how they've been playing, especially on the road. We knew Houston was going to be tough. Although I did, like, we know that Austin likes to play against Houston and Dallas, and they tend to play better for some reason. Just they like beating them, I guess. But I didn't think it would be enough because of how we played against St. Louis City, which was a team that was in a not so good spot, right? But so it turns out that we actually, like you said, we actually had shots on target. We actually came out in that first half and had a couple of chances. three, if I'm not mistaken, were, you know, relatively good chances, which is something that you want to see. You want to see your team go out there away and attack and do something and propose. And I think that was a good performance by the team. Second half was a little bit more defensive. Houston controlled us a little bit more. They were definitely favorites, but the team did not crumble. They actually were defensively solid. Stuber obviously had some important saves. And that last miracle play, that one play that the subs got, CJ and Emiliano Rigoni, you know, you didn't expect that goal, and that goal happened, and it gave us the win. I mean, it was a very good performance by the team, especially not crumbling at any moment.
Mate, Real Madrid fans will tell you, all you need is one. All you need is one, bro. And that's all Austin FC needed to get those 3 points. Like you said, you know, the subs coming off the bench, CJ Fadri and also Emiliano Rigoni, an unlikely hero. You know, a lot of fans, and I throw myself in there. We have already written them off because people will say that, yes, this was a great goal from Emmy, but he still owes us much more. He's a DP player. It's nice to see him happy. It's good for him to know that there are fans still in this fan base that back him, even though he has been going through a bit of a rut with Austin FC. If we're being quite honest, the numbers just don't back him up. But yeah, you know, it's very nice for Emmy to get that support from the city, like I said. But real quick, some tweets from Austin FC Communications at AustinFC_PR. They put out this tweet, Alex. They say, following Saturday's 1-0 win over Houston, Austin FC has now won 6 of its 9 all-time matches against the Dynamo. And they didn't stop there. They said also, Austin FC have picked up 9 of the last 12 points available to them with wins over Dallas, San Jose, and Houston, believe it or not. Now, real quick, some stats from last night's match before we get into some highlights. 7 shots for Austin FC. 4 of those were on target. They had 32% possession. This was something that Josh Wolf was talking about going into this game, how Houston's Dynamo was one of, if not the best possession team in MLS right now. Austin FC only had 300 passes, just shy of that 77% pass accuracy. Maybe not with their standard. They like to usually have it higher than that. 11 fouls for the Verde and Black. The game did get a little chippy there at the beginning. I think there was more fouls than shots in the first 45 minutes. 2 yellow cards for Austin FC. Thank goodness none of those went to Diego Rubio, because if not, he would have been suspended for the next game against the Galaxy. 0 red cards. You love to see it. 2 offsides and 1 corner kick for the Verde and Black. Now, Alex, those are a lot of numbers that I just threw at you. Real quick, what stood out for you? What stood out to you from the numbers that I just, you know, put out there? Maybe some stats put out by Austin FC PR before we get into the highlights.
Well, I mean, for one, you know, it is great to think that you won 3 out of the last 4 games, right? You got 9 points out of 12. That's definitely an improvement from where we were when we started the season, right? I still say, you know, to like as much as I like winning, just to take these calmly. I want the team to improve. I want us to really show that we deserve the spot that we have on the table right now. But it's not like we're back, right? I don't think it is. I think we need to take game by game, step by step. But it's definitely good to see that. To me, what I stood out the most in this game was that the team defensively was organized. We discussed it on the space. Julio was not going to be there. And Julio is a big part of Yashis's plan and the scheme, offensively and defensively. But even with Julio out and with Leo still injured, we still managed to defend well. To me, that's amazing, especially compared to the defensive crisis from last season, right? So I applaud that. And the midfield also got a hold of that game, which was, like you said, very chippy. It was a lot of fouls. It was hard. It was going to be an intense match, and the team knew how to handle it. So I'm proud of the boys for that.
Yeah, I think there was definitely a mental aspect going into this game, Alex. Not only what you can put out on the field, you know, Danny talks about it a lot, you know, and John Gallagher even talked about it post-match whenever you and him spoke. You know, both of them kind of mentioned how they had to get mentally prepared for this game, and it wasn't hard to get mentally prepared for a derby match. They knew what they needed to be up to in order to come into this game and perform well. And I think they really got it spot on. They really nailed it. I think they had the right mentality, and really as a collective is what I'm saying now. They had the right mentality coming into this game. And fortunately for Austin FC, you know, Emmy comes in with his shooting boots on, and it was also a nice finish, but that's a perfect transition. We'll get into the highlights right now, mate. And the first one that I want to touch up on, Alex, is minute six, minute seven. And I'm going to give Beto a little bit of criticism, Alex, because you mentioned a couple minutes ago how Austin MC defended well. I think they did enough. There was some things that I'm going to criticize them on. I know it wasn't a perfect game. They did well, and we are giving them praise. But minute six, Coco Carrasquilla puts in Latif Blessing, who is running in on Austin FC's back line, but Guilherme Biru is keeping him on sides by about 4 or 5 yards. Maybe you could say he was tracking back his run, whatever, right? But if you let the play develop just a little bit further, Alex, and I'll get your thoughts on this exact moment, Guilherme Biru just gets a really just amateur soft touch on the ball instead of kind of just putting your butt through it or getting a knee on it, getting a hip on it or something, and just kind of clearing it, right? Instead, he kind of just flops it. He kind of just, you know, just flicks it a little bit. The ball falls into Houston Dynamo player's path. I believe it was Bossy. He sets up number 27, his last name. I don't want to butcher it, but he gets a shot off. And if it wasn't for Brendan Heinzeck's goal-saving tackle, and yes, I'm calling it a goal-saving tackle, even though Brad Stuver isn't going, we know what he can do. That would have been very difficult for Stuver to keep out. Brandon Heinzeck, luckily, he puts his foot in front of the ball, in front of goal, saves Stuver, saves a huge chance. And right there, you're thanking Brandon Heinzeck. And you're saying, I'm sorry if I ever criticize you, Brandon Heinzeck. Fantastic tackle. But if we want to rewind a little bit, Alex, your thoughts on what I had to say on Biru. And is it fair to still say that I'm still sus about Guilherme Biru's defensive output? Josh Wolf is kind of right when he says that he's still learning what they're trying to do.
Well, I mean, I agree on that point, and I'll agree that Guilherme doesn't seem to be, you know, like 100% settled in with the idea and defense. Like, I don't think about solidness yet when thinking about Biru. What I will say, though, is that on that play, Biru is the one tracking the Dynamo player down because he's the only one. The rest of the defense is moved up the field, and he's the only one back. Okay. Tracking that race, right? And then when he tries to make the clearance, you can see that the Dynamo player is covering the ball with the body. It was a very uncomfortable movement by Biru to try to get the clearance. So I just think it was just not comfortable enough for him to get a good punch to the ball, let's say, and get it out of there.
Also, Alex, it looked like it was a little bit, if he was right-footed, he would have just, you know, just nailed that out. But it seems like he tries to, you know, kind of stab at it with his left foot, and he's in an uncomfortable position, you know, when you're talking about posture. And I think that also goes to it. So I see what you're saying. Good take. I like that. I like that, bro. But okay, we're going to move on to one of the other highlights that we had here tonight on the Top Flight Pod. This was minute 21. Now, before the match, Football Critic, you were in the box. We were with the fans. Section 232, but before going into the seats of the section, I spoke with OSG from Noodle Time, and, you know, he kind of asked me for my prediction going into the match, and I highlighted Jader Obregón. And, you know, you might think, hey, well, that's, you don't have to be a genius to highlight Jader Obregón, one of the most dangerous players, but I knew that he was going to be an impact player in this game, or at least I was hoping he was. And in this highlight, in minute 21, Austin FC is on the break with Jader Obregón on the left-hand side. He jumps over one tackle, races down to the touchline, squares it back to Alex Ring, who was making the run in, but, you know, by himself into the box, because Ethan Finley was kind of pulling the mark with him, kind of getting two guys along with him. But unfortunately, Alex, your tocayo, Alex Ring, he shoots it right at Steve Clark. Now, Scott pushed back on this. He said, hey, it's not that he shot it right at Steve Clark. Ethan Finley and the Houston defenders were covering the other window that the ball could have gone to. So it was either maybe ping it on one of the players and a deflected ball goes in, or shoot it hard at where Steve Clark was at. Hope that he misses and the ball goes into the back of the net. But unfortunately, Steve Clark makes the save. Alex Ring shot doesn't go into the back of the net. What were you thinking when that was happening, Alex?
What I thought was that I thought, first of all, that the ball was going to be too Finley, or that someone else was going to come in, not necessarily Alex Ring. And I thought that when Ring shot it, he came in late. Like, I know he got the shot, but it kind of felt like the ball ran through the box much longer than needed. I felt like there was a space that should have been taken over by someone else to take a better shot. That being said, you know, that just was the way the counter happened, and Alex got the shot. Sadly, went straight to the keeper. Nothing to do there. But I do want to comment on one thing that you mentioned about Haller. It was impressive to me that the first 15 minutes of the game, Houston was pressing a lot in the midfield, and they just left Haller open time after time after time. And Haller was a nightmare for them. And Austin was finding Haller. Like, they realized Haller was open, and they've come to know Haller better, to the point that they know that if he's in a space, just send the ball to him and he'll run everything. And what I also noticed is that there's a little moment in the game where Biru goes up and to the middle of the midfield, and Haller is the one that stays more outside to the left, which is not usual. You don't usually see the left back going in and the left wing going, like, staying out. And it was interesting to me because that space that Biru was at is the same space where he was at when he had that amazing long shot goal at Q2.
Yes.
So it just makes me wonder, is this something worked on after they saw Biru kind of score from that specific point? You know, let Biru go up into the middle and had it stay outside.
You know, I mean, it's something that I wouldn't put it past this team. You know, we know that they did get that set piece coach, and although this isn't necessarily a set piece, but I'm sure that they're working on things in the training ground, and the fact that they see that this guy has a long shot rocket in his locker room, something that he can pull off. I'm sure that that's now going into the game plan. Just whenever they realized, when, you know, just as soon as these trainers realized that long throw-ins could work because Julio can just flick it back and there's a half chance somewhere, they just went at it and went at it and went at it. So it doesn't surprise me that maybe they think something works and they're just going to keep trying it and trying it and trying it, just like they did with crosses back in the day, Alex. But I do want to move on to minute 46, mate. Houston puts in a lofted cross into the box that finds their number 18. He volleys the ball towards goal, but Stuver, somehow, majestically, he stands tall and makes really a cat-like reflex save. I really want to get your thoughts on this, mate, because he spoke to you post-match, right, in the player mix zone, and you asked him about his many saves. You told him that he was the leader in saves this season, and Stuver kind of just shrugged it off a little bit. He's like, yeah, I've made a bunch of saves, but the defense has also helped me by, you know, kind of making some shots predictable, is what he says. But he highlights this save, Alex. He says, hey, the one right before the half, maybe that one could have gone in, could have gone either way, I think is what he says. But what did you think, you know, whenever you saw this save during the match, and then you spoke with him post-match, like, what kind of connection did you make there?
Well, first thought is that, you know, we know Stu is a great keeper, and the way we know that is because we've seen him have a lot of great saves, right? I feel like if we only see him, you know, like, pick up the ball from the ground, and we wouldn't have that image. Then when I spoke to him and he told me that, he was like, yeah, you know, I may have a lot of saves, the most saves in the league, but the defense helped me by making those saves just being easy, like predictable, easy to catch. And he's right. I agree with that. Like, his stats can be deceiving, and credit goes to the defense for making the job easier for us too. That being said, I just mentioned it, we know Stuber is a great keeper because we have seen him make amazing saves. That's telling me that rivals have had amazing shots that Stuber has had to react to, right?
And that's something, Alex, that people touched up on earlier this week, or midweek, you could say, whenever we dropped the graphic, you know, Stuber leading the league in saves. You know, we can reference that graphic. I'm sure maybe some journalists were thinking about that, you know, when they're working on their pieces, right? Stuber, hey, leading the league, right, with saves. And you know, it's interesting to see the comments that some people were posting, because they were highlighting just that, what you said, man. It's like, hey, yes, it's great that Stuver has all these saves, but you also got to look at the other side. What does that say about our defense? It means that we're allowing them to get shots on goal, quality shots on goal, shots that need to be saved. Because let's say they have, you know, this was the Seattle game. They had, you know, 30 plus shots, but only two or three of them were actually dangerous and on target, right? So the fact that Stuver still has to make those quality saves against the shots that are making him the leader of saves in the league, it is a little bit alarming. It is a bit of a red flag, but you can only hope that this defense tightens up as the season goes on. Cascante will come back, and then you also get Leo Väisänen, who is back in full training, by the way. So I'm sure that's a bit of light at the end of the tunnel for this defense and the woes that they're currently experiencing right now. But even though, you know, there are defensive issues, this team is only 3 points away from first place, which is crazy to say. I don't know if you think that, but it is what it is, man. Go ahead.
I agree. I mean, by that comment, I don't mean to discredit the defense at all. Like, I still applaud their performance last night. It was a very good performance defensively. And this, at the end of the game, this is soccer. This is football. Like, you are going to have, like, if, you know, if you're facing a good opponent, that opponent is going to have shots on target. You cannot go at your defense, you know, screaming at them because the opponent had, you know, four shots on target. Like, no, that's normal. That's the game. That's how, that's what, you know, that's what happens when you play a soccer match.
I agree.
Just saying, you know, the fact that we do have the keeper with the most saves, unless 90% of them are, you know, extremely easy, you still, I think you wouldn't want to have that many shots on target taking on you.
Now, Stuver, his stats from last night, 90 minutes played, of course, six saves, prevented 1.51 goals, so 1.5. High claims won, three saves from inside his box. He had a 72% pass accuracy. His long balls completed 13 out of 24. And his match rating, ladies and gentlemen, was an 8.4. So we're giving him his flowers here on the Top Flight Pod. As always, this guy probably has a garden outside of how many flowers he's gotten from people in his career in Austin FC, right? But, Alex, I want to move on to minute 67. Stuver saves Amine Bassi's rocket of a shot that was trying to creep into the top corner. But again, San Stuver says, nope. I'm keeping a clean sheet tonight, and that they did. Now, this one, I don't want to spend too much time on it because, you know, not much to analyze. It was a poor clearance from Hedges. You highlighted that to me off camera. Maybe we can touch up on that. But it was maybe a bit of a routine save maybe for the camera. It looked a little, you know, difficult for Stuver, but I'm sure he had that, you know, well under his reach. But if that would have gone in, definitely that stadium would have erupted, and you know, the whole atmosphere, the whole momentum would have shifted, and it would have gone to Houston's way for the last couple, what was it, the last 30 minutes, last 20 minutes at that point. But anything you want to add on Bassi's shot, mate?
No. I mean, that's one more Houston opportunity that we're thankful to have Stuver. Mm-hmm. Because it definitely, like you said, like if Houston would have had a goal in there, the story would have been very, very different. Actually, most of the second half, they had the momentum. They were, you know, attacking, we were defending, and it felt like Houston had a whole lot more chances. Most of them, I actually thought that Houston just didn't capitalize in. Like, they messed up, they didn't take good shots, but the movement in general, or the chances created, were good. So at some point we were saved by Stuver, at some point we were lucky, Houston also messed up. But, you know, beyond that, the team still knew how to stand tall.
You know, man, I think two people will agree with you with what you just said. Houston fans for sure, and also Josh Wolf, because, you know, midweek he was giving praise to this team. He was saying how efficient they were, how they took care of their chances, how they weren't wasteful in front of goal, and he was comparing them to his team. He was saying how Austin FC has been wasteful. They haven't been efficient in front of goal, but against Houston, it looks like the roles reversed, and, you know, Houston did have many chances. Of course, Stuver was there, but also it seems like they were wasteful in some some of their shots. Some of their shots just kind of walked into Brad Stuber, and he was able to contain them very easily. And Austin FC, you know, we're going to get to the next one right now, but they, one chance that they had, a few chances that they had, right? We did have shots, but they really didn't trouble Steve Clark other than that Alex Ringwood. But, you know, the little bit of chances that Austin FC had, Alex, is what I'm trying to say, they did take advantage. So the roles may be reversed there when it comes to being efficient in front of goal, as Josh Wolf would say. Now, minute 85, bro, Rigoni, he gets his goal. First goal of the season, which is crazy. I know that the Verde Pendant boys, I think they have him for fantasy. Finally, he's going to give him some kind of points. Rigoni, goal. Stuver sends out a bomb of a goal kick for World Critic that CJ Fabry rises up like a giant, just like if he had wings on the back of his jersey. He rises up like if he's drinking some kind of Red Bull, bro, because Red Bull used to give you wings. Gave CJ Fodder the wings last night, but he flicks the ball into the run of Emi Rigoni, who finished it off so well. I mean, the finish that Emi gave us last night, bro, was just finally Rigoni. Finally. I mean, it brings me back to the days where Bali would say, Rigoni, Rigoni. And he gives us a glimpse of the player that he should have been and still needs to be for Austin FC, because he's still under contract until the end of this year. But Alex, I want to get your take on this goal, because it was against the run of play. I know that the stadium was shocked when this happened, because they were just praying for a goal. And I felt like they thought it was coming. Rigoni says, nope, comes off the bench along with CJ Fodri, and they changed the game. Your thoughts on this goal?
That's exactly how it went. I felt the same way. I felt like Houston would score at any moment. I didn't feel like we had a chance. And then just out of nowhere, just one goal kick, one header and goal. I mean, it was crazy. I was shocked too. especially because, you know, with Rigoni's history at Austin, I a lot of people complain. I have complained. Like, he has had bad moments with ball control, like first touch. Last night was the opposite. Last night, like, yeah, CJ got the header, and then Rigoni controlled with his thigh, and then kept on running in between two CBs. One, like, he had control, he was fast, and then he was accurate. He actually shot the ball in the precise place to get a goal and give us the win. I mean, that run by Rigoni was an elite movement and shot at the end of the day. And that's the kind of DP quality that you would think comes with that saying.
Exactly. Now, right now that we're on the topic of Rigoni, I want to kind of analyze the goal. Maybe we could talk about him and your conversation post-match in that mix zone that a lot of people are talking about on social media, which, Alex, congratulations, bro. That interview was absolutely hard-hitting. It really made a lot of people happy. And it was honestly a really feel-good moment between, I'd say a journalist like yourself and a player. It seems like we haven't got that many moments between, or at least in the Austin FC world, and we got one last night because your fantastic work with Emi. So I just wanted to give you flowers on that, mate. But let's stick on the topic now. I want to talk about Emi's stats from last night. He had 18 minutes. Of course, he had the one goal of last night with an XG of 0.18. Fantastic. Accurate passes, 4 out of 4, 100% there. But that's not really where I wanted to put emphasis, although his match rating was 7.4. What I do want to point out on Rigoni is he delivered the second loss at home for Houston Dynamo. They lost earlier this season to Red Bulls New York. And he also contributes to Austin FC securing their first real clean sheet since, you got a clean sheet against Seattle away from home, but it was a nil-nil. I call it a fake clean sheet. They got their first clean sheet against the Houston Dynamo. So kudos to Emi Rigoni. But Alex, I want to get your take on Rigoni. You know, I want to talk about him first post-match, you know, what he had to say. We're on the topic of that interview. You know, what kind of energy did you get from him, mate, post-match? Seemed like he was very happy to talk to the media, talk to the press. What can you tell us of that interaction?
Well, first, I just want to say thank you for that, for those comments. Although I wouldn't dare to say I'm a journalist. I have a lot of respect for that career. You know, I think that the journalists that do cover the team are great, and I wouldn't dare to call myself that, but I do love covering this team as a whole and as part of Racing TV.
We need to come up with names for us.
Yeah. There's
They
a
do.
there like there's a debate, like you know, what's the middle ground between content creators and people that cover sports team? Like there's
Yeah.
gotta be a name for that.
Exactly. You know,
But
because guys like Phil, Eric Goodman, Jorge, I mean, those guys have been putting in work for years. So you're right. It would be unfair to just say, oh, I'm a journalist today and tomorrow I'm this and I'm down that. You're right, Alex, 100%.
But well, on Rigoni, the first thing is that definitely he was happy. He was just happy. We know Rigoni smiles a lot, you know, that's his signature, that big smile. But last night it seemed and it felt genuine, like he was really, really happy. You know that you know, there's a lot of words going around that saying like, hey, this guy just came here to collect a check, like, and do nothing. He's just sitting
Bobby.
around.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
At the end of the day, like if he gets the chance to help the team, he will. He's not here just because, like, sadly things have not gone his way. Yeah, sadly for him, sadly for us. But whenever opportunities like last night happen, he wants to do it. He wants to score. He wants to help the team, and you can tell that. Yesterday's smile would tell you that.
So Alex, let's talk about the goal because that it's kind of intertwined with the post-match conversation that you guys had. And what I'm talking about is when you asked him about the history that he has playing that number nine position. Now, if you ask me, the goal, the movement that he did in that goal, Rigoni, he moved like a nine in that goal. He made the movement that a nine would do. His first touch was that of a nine. His first touch was that of a striker. And I want to give him credit for that first touch because it really sets up his shot, you know, and it's with the difficult part of your body to really keep the ball under control. That bit of that upper thigh section. I mean, it's very difficult to, you know, kind of just keep it in track with you, keep it ahead of you and not, you
To
know,
the
let
right
it fall
speed.
to the right speed, exactly. Not let it fall behind you, right? Because then you got to track back and try to, you know, set up the play again. He finishes it off past Steve Clark and he leaves him standing like a statue, bro. Now, I want to ask you about that quote. You know, you ask him, like, Emmy, there's history of you playing at the nine in Austin. What was it? Have you gotten a little bit of reminisce moment, or have you gotten a little bit of a memory from your days when you played that nine? And he just looks at you and he gives you the biggest smile and he goes, yeah. But then he's also very honest, mate. He says that Austin has two great strikers, two great number nines. And even though Josh has used him there in the past as a second point, he doesn't think that he'll be used there because of the players that are occupying that spot. But your thoughts on what he told you post-match on that specific quote, you know, him playing at the nine.
Well, you know, it gave me the feeling that he can do it. I think he has the quality, especially because what we have seen him do with Austin is always, you know, the wings and then either cross it or try to make a pass. But we have never seen, or not never, but we haven't seen much of Rigoni just getting the ball in front of goal and shoot, right? I'm sure, and I know there have been moments where he has been in front of goal and hasn't gone too well. I know that, but the way, like the movement that he had last night was definitely that of a nine, and I think that while that's not something that I think would happen every single game if we play him out the nine or anything like
Of
that,
course, of course.
it's definitely one more tool that I think we haven't really used. I mean, we have used him a lot, you know, on the wings, on the left, on the right, more on the left, on the right, and he hasn't really paid off. But then we never really saw him more centrally. And he said it himself. He said, that's a position that I really enjoy because I can just get the ball, turn around, and shoot. And I think that tells you, like, this guy, it's a simple enough of an instruction or of an idea for him to feel more comfortable and just try to be more to try to contribute more to the team.
For sure. Now, what he had to say on his goal, he says this. He says, quote, I knew that Fadri, although just real quick, he said Joffrey. He said Joffrey. Now, I'm wondering if Rigoni is a Game of Thrones fan. I'm wondering if he's a Game of Thrones nerd like me and B. Just real quick, I'm gonna throw this out there. Brian reads the Game of Thrones books. He couldn't wait till the new season to come out, so he started reading the books. That's a little fun fact about Brian. But Rigoni, we need to find out if he's a fellow Game of Throner, because he calls Fodry Joffrey. Or I wonder if it was just a mix-up. But he says this. He says, I knew that Fodry was going to win that ball. He's a guy who plays really well in the air. He's pretty tall. I read it. I read the play, and it ended in goal. We're happy. Rigoni, big smile. I know he's, well, now he's back in Austin. I'm sure he's celebrating with the family, calling back home, like Bali said with Biru. Metí golazo, mamá. You know, Bali was out of pocket for that one. And he was called out. I loved it. I loved it that Brazilian fans called him out, saying, bro, Biru has played in bigger stadiums than Q2, probably times three. But anyways, I do want to read some comments from our critic on what people were saying about the interview that you had with Rigoni, the conversation, and what he had to say. Paul from the Verde Pendant, he says, the smile that Emi Rigoni puts on his face when a football critic, a.k.a. Alex, asked him about his history when playing at the nine, and he put dot, dot, dot with the eyes. And then Jay Stack says, that's something I noticed. So glad he read that, bro, right, and was right and was in the right position and didn't get caught flat-footed trying to win that ball with his chest. Great play from both players. Really good point there, Alex, because like we said, the movement of the movement was of that of a striker, right? That's what we were mentioning. Yeah. Alvaro, shout out to Alvaro. He says, this is dope. Great interview. I'm telling you, bro, people liked it. Rocky says, great interview. Verde Nation says, shout out Football Critic for asking all the right questions. And then Elena says, good job, gentlemen. I love the interview in Spanish with Emmy. Keep it going. Let's see. We'll read maybe just one more. This is from T Socials. They say, he looks so relieved to have made a tangible contribution. He knows that he hasn't lived up to the hype or salary. I feel like I've gotten that impression from Emmy in the past, mate. But let's see. We spent a little bit of time on Emmy, bro. Anything else you want to add on him? Of course, he's the man of the hour. He got the all important goal. But anything else you want to add on Rigoni?
Yeah, I mean, I just want to add, you know, before a new RB comes out saying play Rigoni at the nine, start him at the nine, whatnot. I think he was right when he said we have two very good number nines. He's third in that list. And while he has, or I hope he would have that quality of like that run and that type of shot more often, I don't think he would give the team everything that Rubio gives or what Sardis gives in a late game, which is mostly drugging marks and opening spaces, creating chances. I think Rigoni could help in moments like last night, like exactly that type of movement, not every single number nine duty. So what it is, a good tool to know that it is good to know that we have that tool and that we can use it and we can experiment with it.
Hold on, mate. I agree. Now, I do want to move on to some other post-match quotes. You know, we talked about him. He gave him his flowers and, you know, also mentioned that he still owes this fan base. One goal is not enough. And Alex, you definitely hit that spot on. You know, the Emmy still has to contribute as a DP player. It doesn't end here. We got to build from it. But I want to move on to Josh Wolf, Coach Wolf, what he had to say. Now, some quotes here. He goes on to say, obviously, the subs had a massive impact on the game. So a lot of credit goes to those guys, but it goes to the whole group. They worked extremely hard throughout the match. Houston is a very difficult opponent. I think they've had one loss out of the last 13 games at home. They lost to Rebels New York earlier this season, so that's a little debunked there. It's a challenging place to go and play. That is true, even though I was shocked that the stadium was kind of empty, but it ended up filling up. He also says, our wingers worked their butt off in the first shift, and when Ethan and O'Brien came off, I thought Emmy and CJ Fodry did a great job. Both sides of the ball, it's really, really important to understand that. When the opportunity fell for Emmy, I think his first touch was fantastic, and he finished it extremely well. He goes on to talk about the defense. He says, Matt Hedges and Brendan Heinzeich did have a heck of a job. I think Guilherme Biru and John Gallagher, they're out on islands a little bit against the group. Houston builds in a 3-2-2-3. They have a lot of diagonal balls. They ask big questions. I thought those guys handled that really well. And just last thing, I did want to touch up on Josh Wolf. This was something that was talked about on social media. Eric Goodman, Football Critic, he asked him about, you know, the match against Houston and whatnot. And then it seems like Josh Wolf was a little cocky with the record that he has against Houston. You know, Eric Goodman pointed out the stat that Austin now has won the majority of the games, or was it six of the nine games against Houston? And Josh Wolf kind of just, you know, seemed like the godfather. You know, he kind of was like looking at his fingernails and he was like, Eric, What's the record? You know the record? Yeah, that's the record. And I was like, yo, who is this guy, bro? Josh Wolf, when did he turn into the Godfather? But Football Critic, your thoughts on what Coach Wolf had to say post-match? Maybe I got a little bit in character there, but give us your thoughts on what Wolf had to say.
I mean, the record, I think the record is great. I mean, you know, 6 out of 9, Houston fans. I've seen some of them like to talk a lot. But I mean, Houston, I just keep remembering there's a Danny interview when, you know, they asked him, Danny, what's the match that motivates them the most? And he goes like, Dallas, you know, like we like the matches against Dallas, like that's a big match. Houston, they don't even think about Houston. They care about Dallas. To me, that's just funny. But it is great that even in our worst moments or downs, we are getting, like last season, we were bad in a bad moment, and we beat Dallas and Houston back to back 3-0 wins. And then this season we're not in a good spot, and then we come out and win and beat Dallas and we beat Houston. I mean, it is definitely a great moment and a great record for Austin FC.
Definitely, mate. Now, just we're going to close the topic on Houston Dynamo. The match was great. It was a good win away from home. So, Alex, you know, we kind of said this on the space last night, but for the people that didn't tune in to the space but are tuning into the pod, if you could give Austin FC a grade now, you know, what kind of percentage grade would you give them, or what kind of letter grade would you give this team for their performance against Houston last night?
For the entire team, I would give them a B plus or an A, mostly because of the defensive side and organization. Offensively, not so much, but defense and organization, midfield, a solid B plus.
All right, solid B plus. I think a lot of people listening to this would be like, hey, that's passing, let's go. But you know what? I'll be a little bit more optimistic. And hey, I'm gonna give myself my flowers, pat on the back. I was the only one saying that we were gonna get a result in Houston. JC, nothing. Scott, nothing. Everybody in the group chat, nothing. Sama was really the only one that was positive with me on Discord. Sama said we were gonna get 7 points out of the next couple of games. But hey, right here, pat on the back. We got the 3 points and we move. I'll give this team an A or an A minus, whichever one is lower. I forget. I've been out of the school system for a while. But Football Critic, looking ahead, the Galaxy is coming up. They're going to be flying down here to Austin, Texas. They got to play at Q2 Stadium. It's going to be Diego Rubio against Diego Fagundes. Diego versus Diego, the heavyweight championship title match at WrestleMania is going to be at Q2 Stadium. But what is your overall thoughts going into that match? Maybe you can give us a little bit of a prediction. Galaxy is flying high. I got to double check the standings. I don't know if Vancouver or the Galaxy are in first place, but I know that they're duking it out. But like I said, what is your overall thoughts going into this match?
I think this is going to be an important match because this is a team that seems actually good. Like not, you know, maybe got a few good results. No, like they actually seem to be building on something. Playing a good style of soccer, they're not just top of the table at the beginning of the season and can plummet down like Houston did with us. No, they seem actually solid, mm-hmm. And it's a good measuring stick for Austin because meanwhile, Austin hasn't been that great. Like we have 3 wins, 3 ties, and 3 losses, if I'm not mistaken, right? Well, people argue, hey, but the ties, you know, was against some of the stronger teams in the league. And then the wins, hey, we won, you know, we actually played good. And then when we lost, it was like, well, you know, maybe it was unlucky, 1-0 loss to St. Louis City. Right now, Austin has 3 wins out of 4 games. They are feeling confident. They are going to play at Q2 against what seems to be a good, solid team. So to me, if anything, this is a match that can measure us and tell us exactly what we are. Because I know fans are happy and say, hey, we're finally back, you know, 3 wins out of 4. Some others are like, no, those were lucky wins. Or those were very, very bad teams like Dallas and San Jose. So this is a place that where we can know exactly where we are. Not only if, let's say we lose 1-0, it's not about that. It's about how we play against the Galaxy.
Oh, okay. I like that take. I like that take. You know, this team, let's be very honest here. You know, we're not going to sell any kind of smoke. The Galaxy could come into Q2 Stadium and very well beat Austin FC. We're very conscious of that, just like you said, Alex. And if you lose 1-0, if you're in the entire match, if you're fighting toe-to-toe with a team like the LA Galaxy, who, by the way, Alex, right now they're currently winning their match 3-1 against San Jose. They're at 18 points in the West. That puts them 6 points on top of Austin FC, who finds themselves in eighth place against the Galaxy. They're in first. But like just like you said, you know, you really got to measure yourself, kind of like see where you're at based on the Galaxy, because that's the perfect measuring stick. They're at the top of the West, and it's a good way to figure out exactly where your level is at. That's a spot on take, bro. But if you could give us an early score prediction, I know it's extremely early. We could get Leo back. Is Owen gonna be back? You know, Owen is he's a big question mark going into this game. He got an ankle knock, some type of ankle injury that kept him out of the Houston game. But an early prediction, I'll give you mine first. That way you can get a little bit, you know, get your feet wet or whatnot. I'm gonna go with a 1-1 draw. Now, the reason why I say that, the reason why I say that, hold on, before people out there call me delusional. I'm looking at the stats, I'm looking at the numbers, and the Galaxy has conceded the same amount of goals that Austin FC has conceded. Yes, they are scoring more. They have 20 goals this season against Austin FC's 13, sorry, against Austin FC's 12. But Austin FC and the Galaxy have both conceded 13 goals. So that tells me that their defense have similar characteristics. I don't know if it's fair to say that, but I think Austin FC's crowd is going to serve as that 12th man and give them that extra boost that they're going to need to contain a team like LA Galaxy that's flying high right now. And I think we're going to get a result. Just like I said against Houston, I'd be happy with a win, but I'd settle for a draw. Your turn, brother.
I think it's definitely very early on, and I have not been doing well with the predictions. I mean, not at all. Austin has been so unpredictable. It's frustrating when I think they're going to win, they draw or lose. When I think they're going to lose, they win. I don't know. It's been a mess for me. But right off the bat, I would say I think Austin is coming into this game with a whole lot of confidence. Like when you hear Stu or say, you know, we are winning 3 out of 4 games, you can feel they know it. They know it, they're feeling it, they wanna come out and play at home. They love to play at home. So I think they're gonna be very, very motivated. I'm going to say Austin's going to fight. I don't think they'll get you know, very dominated. I don't think they'll get a 3-0 loss or anything like that.
Bro, I'm honestly, bro, I'm damn near gonna turn into Ted Lasso out here saying believe. But sorry to cut you off. Go ahead, Alex.
No, I mean, I think that's about right. I mean, I think let's say I'm gonna go with a tie, but comparing both defenses, I'm gonna see a 2-2 draw.
Okay. I like that take. Anything can happen. Like you said, it's still very, very early on. We don't even have the player availability reports. Early predictions right now are meaningless. But of course, we got to get one out there for the listeners of the Top Flight Pod. And let us know what you think. Let us know how Austin FC is going to do against the Galaxy. I know a lot of people are going to look at the table and automatically say, hey, top team against a mid-table team. You know how that goes, but anything can happen in this league. You know, it's very unpredictable. John Gallagher, I believe, was telling y'all post-match. He was saying how, hey, the teams, sorry, the matches in MLS, they are unpredictable. You know, whenever you're on the road, you cannot control a game. So we'll see if that plays out in Austin FC's favor. Now, some recent matches for the Galaxy, mate. They are currently beating the Galaxy 3-1 at the half. They beat Vancouver, another top team, 3-1. They lost to LAFC, their arch rivals, 2-1. And then they beat the Seattle Sounders 1-0. Seattle's in a poor moment right now. Pedro de la Vega, another hamstring injury. And then they also beat the Sporting Kansas City March 23rd, 3-2. So some favorable results for these guys. Probably the reason why they're in first place right now. So we'll see just how Austin FC fares against this team. Now, if we want to look further ahead than the LA Galaxy mate, you know, kind of see what's coming up for Austin FC in the very near future? It doesn't get too much easier. You got the Galaxy on Saturday, Vancouver on May the 4th, then FC Dallas May 11th, and then Houston again May 15th, but back at Q2 Stadium. So we'll see just how the Verde and Black does here in the near future, my G. But Alex, before we get out of here, brother, we just got a couple minutes left on tonight's pod. Two things that I want to touch up on tonight's episode that happened across the pond, across the Atlantic, the Coventry Man United game. I know Eric wanted to be on here. Unfortunately, you know, it didn't happen that way. He had Skype. We told him that we needed to be on Zoom, but Coventry against Man United, and of course, El Clásico. I'll let you pick whichever one you want to start off with.
I gotta choose El Clásico. It was a very, very good game. I mean, it was one of those games that you can tell, you know, football, soccer is being played. Not necessarily Pep Guardiola's strategic plays, but just in general. The way Barcelona scored first, then a PK for Madrid, then Barcelona again, then Madrid just comes back. Last minute goal by Jude Bellingham. I mean, and all of that during at the Bernabeu. I just gotta say, it was one great soccer match, one of the best rivalries yet. Also had controversies whether if the ball went through, went completely into the goal or not, or if a PK happened or not. I mean, it was just fun all around. At the end of the day, Madrid just keeps on winning, you know, beating Barca. They keep on winning late. They keep on not giving up. Vini, a disappointment today, I'll say. You can say, well, he got a PK, he got an assist. No, to me, it was a disappointment completely. Had a lot of opportunities that he himself messed up. But beyond that, it was just an amazing match to watch.
Dude, it was one of those matches that I wish I would have been there in person, but I felt like I lived it through OCL. Shout out to my G. You know, he's on the Discord. Probably one of the biggest Real Madrid fans that I've ever met in my life. And the pictures that he was posting, what is one in particular where he has the scarf and he's like, you know, dude, he looks so happy, bro. He looked like a little kid in a candy store. And the fact that he was outside the Bernabeu getting the videos, posting it on his story. I mean, I felt like I was there. You know, he's a really good guy, great friend also, and a big Austin FC fan too. I'm sure that he was celebrating Emi's goal in Madrid because he's low-key an Emi Rigoni fan. Low-key, yeah. He is, right? I kind of think, yeah, he is too. Yeah. But Football Critic, you know, you mentioned how this was a banger of a match. You know, you have banger players also, fantastic players in this fixture. And one guy that I want to talk about is Jude Bellingham, because he's leading the race right now for the Ballon d'Oro. You know, you think it's a little bit early in his career to be getting that kind of award? I know that it's a new era. You don't have the Messi anymore. You don't have the Ronaldo pressure anymore. It's now Jude Bellingham's time. And also, you know, you got Haaland in there. But, you know, just your thoughts on Jude getting those shouts right now.
Is it early for him to be getting those shouts or that chance? No. Is he ahead of Vinicius this season? I wouldn't say so. I mean, I know I just said Vini was a letdown today in the Clásico. But, I mean, Bellingham had an amazing start of the season for Madrid. Amazing, stellar. And then he continued to be important. But I think in most matches, Vinicius came in clutch for Madrid. So the race right now is kind of blurry because, I mean, Mbappe still has a, you know, really good numbers, although those are in France. Haaland is definitely out of the race for now. He just hasn't had a good season. But then you know, who's competing with Mbappe? Is it Vini? Is it Bellingham? Like who is it? But for me right now, it would have to be Vini over Bellingham.
Interesting. I challenge Real Madrid fans listening to this pod if you agree with my G Football Critic, because Jude, I don't know, it seems like I think Jude was the architect of the win in Man City, because if it wasn't for his touch, if it wasn't for that control of the ball, you don't get that goal. And if you don't get that all-important goal, City just thrashes you, maybe, right? But I think still Vini gets a good shot. I think you mentioning that is not a crazy take, but I think people will say it's a hot take, bro. But it is what it is, mate. Madrid pretty much securing their 36th La Liga, if I'm not mistaken, with this win. you know, if it wasn't Barcelona, who's going to catch up to them? Maybe Barcelona fans will feel like the scoreline was a bit unfair. There was that goal line technology debacle that, you know, kind of announced to the world that, yo, La Liga doesn't have goal line technology. Was the ball in? Was the ball out? I know a lot of criticism was going back and forth, but Lunin with some blunders. I think if that would have been called a goal, I think Lunin would have been stealing headlines saying, from hero to zero, because he had the magical performance against Man City, but then you kind of tarnish your name a little bit with a poor performance in an El Clásico, which is probably equally as big of a match against Man City. It was, right? But it is what it is. Now, brother, I want to focus a little bit on the Manchester Coventry game a little bit before we do get out of here. I know Eric, I know he would want to talk about it. He's not here, so we got to mention him a little bit. I was shocked. I was shocked at the energy that the Manchester United players had, you know, after they went up. You know, they were just kind of coasting. They felt like, oh, it's just Coventry. We're up. We don't need to, you know, keep our foot on the pedal to the, we don't, you know, we don't got to keep our foot on the gas. And they let them back into the match. And Coventry almost won it. If it wasn't for a VAR call that was inches, you know, it was inches offside, Coventry would have been up 4-3, right? Coventry would have been in the FA Cup final against Man City. Now, there were pundits that were saying, hey, there might be a little bit of foul play in here because Coventry against Man City, it wouldn't sell. You have a Manchester Derby in the final now. You're going to get clicks. You're going to get views. You're going to get this and that. So I don't know if that goes into it. I'm not here to talk about that tonight, right? This podcast is focused on football and some controversy every now and then. But I was just shocked at Ten Hag's just inability to connect with his players. You know, even going into the penalty shootout, it seemed like they were just nonchalant, didn't care. And even when Casemiro stepped up to take his PK, I mean, if he was taking a PK for Real Madrid, he is more energetic. He is more focused. And I think his PK, the way that he took it, it kind of just told me that he was throwing that PK shootout. And it's unfair to say because a player, that's how they make their money. That's how they work. That's their bread and butter. So they rarely throw games. But his energy just told me like, hey, I'm done with this. I don't want to be here right now. And you know what? Here's the ball to the middle. And the keeper just stood his ground and he saved it. Man United goes to the next round though, so it doesn't matter anymore. But your overall thoughts on that?
No, I mean, to me, the most important part is that the mentality, the attitude that Man United show, that it's lacking the greatness that comes with the name Manchester United.
Agree.
It's lacking, and it has been lacking for a long time now. I know, you know, it's all about the Glazers and trying to get them out and rebuild from the inner core of the club and whatnot. But it just, I can't help but feel like it doesn't matter what players you bring into this club. It doesn't matter which coach you bring in to this club. It's just rotten from the inside. It just doesn't have the right mentality to be that European champion, because I feel like a lot of people just forgotten about it. Like a lot of people forgetting how big Manchester United actually is. And with this type of performances, the only thing they do is keep digging on their graves, right? So
I agree.
It's just sad. It's sad to be a team is struggling so bad in a game like this.
And one thing that I wanted to say, mate, even post-match, right, when the final whistle blew and the referee signaled that Man United had won that PK shootout, the players didn't celebrate it. The players were over it. The players just went over, shook the Coventry players' hands, and there was no celebrations. The only one that I saw get a little bit emotional with the crowd was Højlund. I believe he was the one that took the last PK. He went to the crowd, and, you know, he celebrated, rightfully so. But even then, he turned right back around, and he walked to the rest of his teammates, and his teammates were just very chill, very, you know, very, very calm. And also, Erik ten Hag, you know, post-match, he says that it wasn't a disgrace, or it wasn't like a underachievement or whatnot, that it was something to celebrate, that it's two finals and two seasons or whatnot, something like that. And you know, you can kind of go back and forth on that. And I, you know, wanted to ask you, you know, Ten Hag is kind of painting another picture, but pundits, while I was watching the match, they were saying, yo, this guy's about to lose his job because he was on the brink of elimination by Coventry City. So, you know, Eric is fighting tooth and nail for Erik ten Hag, maybe because they're both named Eric. But you think Ten Hag is, a bit of a victim of bad luck because the injuries going into this game. I mean, Casemiro had to play center back. You know, do you think that Ten Hag is just a victim of bad luck, bro?
I'm not, I wouldn't say that, but I think I'll just put it this way. I think as a whole, Manchester United has so many problems inside that it became toxic to work within Man United or with Man United. And Erik ten Hag has been there for so long now that doesn't matter what he does, he's just now, like, the toxicity got to him. He's not going to produce anything good out of it. He can do very well with some other club. I think he's a good enough manager to get something in some other club. But Manchester United need fresh blood and fresh air right now to turn things around. Because you can say, yeah, well, you know, two finals. What do you win? The Carabao Cup?
Tin Pot trophies. That's what we were telling Eric. That's what we were telling Eric.
You're telling me a team that, you know, it's proud of UCLs and EPLs. It's flexing finals now for a Carabao Cup?
Because you're not beating City in the FA Cup final. There's no way in hell that Manchester United. But you know what? Crazier things have happened in football. Football critic, you know this. I know this. So who knows? Yeah. But on paper, there's no way this Man United team is getting a goal on Man City. So we can leave it at that for the Manchester United conversation. We'll see what happens with Erik ten Hag here in the near future. While Man United is down in the dumps, Real Madrid is flying absolutely high. Barcelona with their own struggles. European football is, you know, heating up. I absolutely love it at this time of the year. You know, Arsenal, maybe a little bit of a choke masterclass. We still haven't heard from Bali. I've been trying to call him. He was going to go to Houston. Then his plans changed. I'm sure Arsenal had some kind of effect on it. But he, if you want, reach out to Bali. Let him know, hey, man, you know, the season isn't over. That's the thing. The season isn't over and City could still fumble. But if you can, reach out to Bali. Let him know, hey, bro, I'm here for you because the guy is down bad. He's down bad. And luckily, Austin FC is giving him a bit of joy here and there. But Football Critic, before we get out of here, Liga MX talk. Chivas won. Sama was very happy. America lost. Sama was double happy when he found that out. And then what was it? Leon, who did they beat? Leon, they beat Monterrey, which was a bit of a shocker, but they have CCC. So people were thinking, hey, maybe they're resting. But how did Pachuca do?
Funny because they won 2-0 versus Santos Laguna.
Oh, anybody beat Santos.
But as it turns out, they rotated, like the B team beat Santos Laguna 2-0.
So, down bad.
Yeah, I mean they the good players. I believe the goals didn't come until the second half when the good players came into the field for Pachuca. But still, you know, Santos Laguna couldn't beat a first half of the B team of Pachuca. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, real quick, some standings in the Liga MX. Club America, B's team, they are in first place with 32. Toluca, they have 32 points as well. Cruz Azul has 30 points. Monterrey has 29. Tigres, 28. Pachuca, 28. Guadalajara, 28. Necaxa, 8. Pumas, 26. Querétaro, 23. León, 23. And Juárez, 15. Looks like it's coming there towards the end. So maybe just one more match they left to see who makes it in and who doesn't. Guadalajara, Chivas, seventh place though. So they must be happy with where they
who's
are.
Who's on top?
Pachuca. But it just because of some goal difference or something, man. But whatever.
Is it because they have the top goal scorer in Liga MX and the CONCACAF Champions Cup?
What's his name? Ronfraud?
No, Rongold. I think you mean.
Oh no! I think you mean Rondon.
Or is it Salogol?
Which one? I like Salogol. I like Salogol.
Okay.
I like Salogol. But the real goat in Liga MX, we all know it's Chicharito.
I mean, where is it in the goal scoring charts?
He's in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's good.
How many goals does he have this season?
Think he has one. One or two.
Okay.
If for him, it's about what he brings to the team emotionally,
I'm sure,
bro.
I'm sure it was a great goal. Yeah, no, don't worry.
Fantastic. Hey, where's Cade at,
Puskas?
Bro? Bro, where is Cade? Bro, I put my reputation on the line for this guy, bro. But it is what it is, mate. All right, let's get out of here. We gotta maybe eat some dinner tonight, and then we'll call it. But Football Critic, thank you for being here tonight, mate. It was a pleasure talking about Austin FC, and hopefully we can get some more footage of Austin FC players. I know a lot of people really liked it. They reached out and said, "Hey, this is great content. I'm really liking the style of interview, the kind of questions that Football Critic was throwing to these players." So hopefully Austin FC's communications team lets us cook. And we could bring you more content. You know, shout out to Houston again. Thank you for the hospitality out there. I know a Football Critic had nothing but great things to say about the people out there, and they treated us well. So you don't really get to say that a lot when you go to Houston, but it was a great trip. It was a really good trip.
If anything, I'll say Houston Dynamo, the stadium, they all treated me very, very well. OSG helped a lot. Great guy, just great guy all around. It just was a great experience. I can say, not only because we won, I was happy to have gone to Houston and to be able to get the opportunities to talk to the players and get those interviews for everyone that listens to our content to enjoy.
My G Football Critic. And on that note, we'll end the pod tonight. So everybody, have a good week. Have a good night. Have a good morning. Have the good rest of your day, wherever time you're listening to this. We'll be back with more content. We'll be reviewing the Galaxy match, probably a Patreon episode midweek. Check out the Discord, check out the Patreon, more content there. So we'll see you soon, everybody, and be safe. Later.